What up? What up, everybody? It's Double G for the Fight Game podcast with John LaRocca here. WrestleMania week, a giant weekend for pro wrestling. Lots of stuff going on all day today. I heard some good stuff about Bloodsport. There's the multiverse going on right now. That show, ROH pay-per-view tomorrow. And just a crazy, crazy weekend. I'm a little sad that I'm not in LA because there's stuff going on that I actually would love to be at, like Wale Mania. Andres Hale invited me to a little get together that I would have loved to go to. I know my brother Ben Cruz and the Ring of Wrestling crew was doing stuff today. So I'm a little, you know, a little FOMO going on, but ultimately I also know it's a crazy, crazy weekend and I'm spending time with my wife. We're going away for Friday and Saturday, so we're going to have a great time because it is her birthday. So every WrestleMania weekend, I'm pretty much staying home from here on out. But what about you? What's going on?
Just like you, I'm pretty bummed I'm not there live. A lot of people, you know, are there that I know. I've seen pictures posted. I'm like, oh, man, you know, yeah, FOMO, like you said. But But yeah, I'm gonna be watching shows from home when I can. I'm gonna try to watch Flex talking off air earlier. Watch Bloodsport tonight, and then cover that for Take It Home podcast this weekend. I'm gonna watch the New Japan Impact show. I'm gonna watch ROH Super Card of Honor show, NXT in the morning, and then I'm gonna watch WrestleMania. But I have a wedding on Saturday night, so I'm gonna stay off my phone and watch WrestleMania at when we get home. Hopefully it's only a 3-hour show and I can kind of get through it.
I'm hearing 3.5.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, that's fine.
Are we going to Dave's on Sunday?
That's my hope. Well, depends on my wife's schedule with work at the salon, so we'll see. At the
5 o'clock start. So
5 o'clock start. Maybe I can get the in-laws over for like an hour early so I can mail over. We'll see if that can happen.
So on Friday, we're driving out to close to Napa in a place called Clear Lake. Crystal wants to be by the lake, even though it's going to be raining. So it kind of screwed. Rain kind of screwed up a little bit. But so I'll be gone Friday. I probably won't even watch really anything Friday. But Saturday night, because she's still, because of her schedule, she's such an early morning person, but that also means she goes to bed pretty early. So I'm hoping that, you know, from 9 o'clock to midnight, I can just zip through night one of WrestleMania. And then when we drive home on Sunday, then head out to Dave's and with the crew and then watch night two. Yeah. So that's my plan, but we'll see how that works. Yeah. Okay. So before we get into our show, I wanted to mention, we're doing a small lineup change for the Fight Game Media Network. I know some of the people who listen to this podcast also listen to podcasts on the Fight Game Media Network. If you don't, if you have no interest, skip ahead about 3 minutes. But I wanted to mention a couple things. We have two shows where we put the full thing on Patreon and then we put the partial show on our free feed. And I want to change that up slightly. Scott Edwards, who's been on this show before, he hosts the 5-Star Joshi show. That show is so important to our network that I want to just keep it behind the paywall. He's still going to do stuff for YouTube, so his face will be all over the YouTube channel. But I want to pull that directly back into Patreon. I don't want to have his show as a free feed. And Brace for Impact, very similarly, very important to our Patreon. I'm pulling the Impact portion off of our free feed. Mike Gilbert and JD, also who have been on this show before, they're going to do more general pro wrestling news. They're going to do a Mike and JD show version, so that will stay in the free feed. So just a small adjustment. But in pulling out Scott's podcast from the free feed, what I am doing is I'm adding a bonus show with this branding, the Fight Game Podcast. You and I go back doing the show probably, you know, sporadically. It's like 6 years now or something. So we've never had a Fight Game Media bonus show or extra show with this branding. So I'm going to take this branding. We're going to do a free show on the Fight Game Media Network with the Fight Game Podcast. I'm going to call it probably FGP Extra or something like that. And so you and I are basically going to hold down the weekends for the free network. I will do a show on Saturday. You will do a show on Sunday. And that'll be the weekend shows for that network. So sometimes the extra, the Fight Game Podcast extra, will just be you and I going over something we didn't cover in this show. Yeah. Other times it'll be me interviewing people. I like talking to people in the industry. I'm going to reach out to John Pollock and try and get something done with him. I'm so interested in how everyone's process is, what people do, their success in wrestling and having websites. And as you know, I'm close to Ben with the Ringer crew, so I want to talk to some people at Ringer Wrestling. So that's my idea for the Saturday show. Pretty laid back, more interview, conversational heavy, maybe not covering, you know, shows all the time or whatever, but that's the idea. So small change there, but every, you know, we're still humming, you know, we're doing really strong downloads this month for us, and it's been fun to see. So we just want to keep pushing forward and moving forward there. All right. Let's talk about something that I thought was a very interesting show for AEW. We'll get to our thumbs up and thumbs down in a second. But I wanted to talk about All Access, because Wednesday night after Dynamite, they did their docuseries. Is it a docuseries? Is it a reality TV show? I guess it would technically be a docuseries, but there's heavy reality TV stuff in there. What would you call it?
It's like a mix of a documentary and a mix of scripted reality.
Yeah,
I think, especially when there's this clearly staged conversations on that show. I thought,
yeah, just a camera and a microphone, or just sitting right there for these women to go off on a Thunder Rosa there.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. And what'd you think? I thought it was okay. Some parts I was kind of bored.
Yes.
Adam Cole stuff, I thought was the best part. The most interesting part is Journey coming back.
I thought their relationship, Britt and Adam Cole, and, you know, I got a sneak peek of this when Dave and I interviewed Adam Cole, which is still one of the favorite interviews that I've done, because I think he came across so genuine and just so likable. Britt really shines on the screen in this show. I think it's very smart of them to utilize her on this show. And then the relationship with one of their top stars, it's intriguing. Like, people want to know little bits and pieces about it. And at the end of Dynamite, they celebrated together, right? Owen Cup, they celebrated together. So you have little bits and pieces of that, and the show kind of gives you a little bit more. So I like that piece of it. Mm-hmm. If it turns a little, you know, a little too dramatic, it may not be my cup of tea. But yeah, that part was the best part, I thought, as well.
The weakest part for me, I thought, was the Young Bucks segment, when they kind of just, we're not going to talk about it.
Right.
And so when you're going to do that, it just kind of loses credibility, like the rest of the show. And honestly, I felt myself kind of hitting that fast forward button during the Young Bucks segments, and just waiting for just the Britt stuff and the Adam Cole stuff.
No, you're right on. And you know, the sad part about that is they actually have a great story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just being, you know, I wish they would have hit the origin story of the Young Bucks way harder, because that is cool, right? It's these two brothers learned how to wrestle in their backyard, and they were so dedicated to the business after the business was telling them, you're not our cup of tea. So then they had to continue to iterate and iterate and iterate and create a version of themselves that was all of a sudden like, hey, like, we may not fit this, but we're going to still make it work. I think that story is so fascinating. They didn't hit it. Maybe they'll hit it at some point. Mm-hmm. But what you're saying is they start this show with Tony Khan saying that they have to relinquish the Trios titles, and he doesn't say why.
Yeah.
And so the Young Bucks have been gone, and they're talking about wrestling at Full Gear in their comeback match. They talk about being so depressed that you know, they were thinking about retirement and they hadn't been in the ring and they don't know, they haven't taken a bump and all of these different things, you know, that really, if you're a viewer who doesn't know what the story is, you're like, did somebody die? Like, did they do something really bad to get them kicked out? And it's just the CM Punk stuff that, you know, those of us who follow very closely, we know. But there's this elephant in the room from the get-go to where I, as a viewer, am saying, oh, this is just like, you know, this is just like any other kind of reality show. We're not going to get any real true insight. Mm-hmm. Like, that's from right from the get. Now, here's a question for you. They're paying CM Punk, I imagine, still. Yeah. He's hurt. Why don't you just use the Punk footage and say CM Punk and the Elite got into an altercation?
Mm-hmm.
CM Punk got hurt. They have all of this footage of him going off at the press conference. Why isn't that the beginning of this show?
Yeah.
Because that draws me in and I go, oh, they're talking about it, instead of dancing around it like they did.
I think it would be more a more interesting show. People would be, like you said, would hook you, will want to stay with the show. Oh man, they're diving into that. I gotta stick with the show for the next coming weeks, whatever it is. I think
you don't have to bury the guy, right?
No,
but
no,
we
no.
saw this on streaming. Like, it's honestly, not like there's this giant secret.
When they started the opening, they're kind of trying to like just even preview the history of it, right? There's no footage of Cody, you know. I thought that was interesting. You know, I get it. They don't want to, you know, promote the WrestleMania main event, you know. And I guess whatever happens with CM Punk, maybe if he's not coming back, they don't want to promote him, but he's part of that history of what happened. You got to tell it. And when you skip over and say, we're not going to talk about it, then, like, I'm sorry. I don't know if I can really stick around for the Adam Cole journey, you know?
Okay, here's the conspiracy theorist in me. Here is the, you know, wrestling surprise in me. The him not being in this show
mm-hmm.
kind of tells me they don't want to spoil his re-debut if he is coming back. So that's what it made me immediately wonder. Not seeing him, I thought, I wonder if he's coming back and they just do not want to spoil that return on this show.
Now, can I ask you this? If he comes back, who do you want him to feud with?
I know how I would do it.
You want him to feud with Omega and the Bucks, right?
Well, I think you would, but the problem with that is I think the second he returns, the fans are going to cheer him.
Mm-hmm.
And
or maybe not.
I think they are. You play that music.
Oh, they'll cheer him. But when the angle they shot this past Wednesday with mm-hmm. the Elite and Blackpool Comic Club, I thought maybe they're not bringing him back. But then if you bring him back for MJF definitely needs him because right now the Sammy Guevara, Darby Allin, and Jungle Boy, we'll get into that later, is not really feeling like it's feeling second fiddle, you know, and a distant one too.
Well, my immediate thought is if you're bringing Punk in, you do what was more than likely going to be the original storyline, which was MJF beating him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do because I think that's where the money is.
MJF beating him and retaining?
Yeah, in Chicago. Because you put it in Chicago, and a lot of people would think that CM Punk is winning that match.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very, very interesting. Of course, all that stuff that happened to Punk this past weekend and all that, you know, drama that happened. I don't know, man. I don't know.
It's weird because this all starts because Dave wrote a message board post that then got screenshot and posted everywhere on the internet.
Which I still don't understand why he decided to post that there, you know, and I don't know. He was having
I think he's frustrated.
Yeah.
And not with wrestling. I think with he got frustrated to a point probably from, I don't know, a lot of the podcasts that are out there and a lot of the stuff that is being said that maybe is that he knows is false, and you know, he gets blamed for stuff. That's my guess, but like being that close to it is kind of weird. Like to me, okay, obviously, you know, my background is real sports. I always see things through a real sports lens. Kevin Durant would absolutely 100% do something similar to what CM Punk did if a writer wrote something that he did not think painted him in the right light. He would post something on Twitter, basketball Twitter would retweet it, blog posts would be written, it would be talked about, but there's so much going on in basketball that story would stay for 24 hours and we'd move on in to the next day. Because that was like on a Friday, I think, it just hovered, like it just hung. It may have been a Thursday, I don't remember. It was after we recorded, though. And it just hovered and hovered and hovered and hovered, and it stuck around. So, you know, I find it interesting that you know, Punk decides to post a story on his Instagram to
fan the flames a
little. Well, fan the flames, but also like diss people still. Like you would think that if he was going to come back, and maybe he's not coming back, because there are people who absolutely believe he's not coming back. Like if you are coming back, why do you want to show people that nothing much has changed since the All Out fiasco?
Yeah.
So that's kind of confusing. You know, bringing Moxley into it is interesting because Moxley hadn't said anything about him. And then Moxley had to answer him on Renee's podcast this week. I think his affectionate name for Punk on that show was What's His Dick? and you know, like Moxley doesn't really have an outlet for that. Like the dude doesn't, like, he's got an Instagram account. I don't think he posted. There was like one story that got posted to his Instagram account.
That's on my Instagram.
you know, he's not on Twitter. He has a Twitter, but he doesn't tweet. I remember when his book was coming out, he was telling me like, gosh, like everyone wants me to tweet about the book, and he's just like not about it, right? This is not his thing. So he didn't have an outlet but then he had his wife's podcast. So it was like good timing. But I don't know. I just find the whole thing a little weird, but it is in just working for any company, you know, there are lines drawn. There are powerful people on two sides sometimes. And what side are you on? Like, you know, not that I've really been in it like that, but you know, loyalty is kind of a big thing. And, you know, from what I gather from what Moxley was mentioning, you know, I don't think that he thought putting the belt back on CM Punk was necessarily the best thing for the company, you know, at that time when they did it. He probably felt like, man, you know, what happens if this guy, something happens and he, you know, takes his ball. And so whatever, that's way back when now. And, you know, if we talk about this too much, you know, people kind of get excited and think that, you know, I'm spouting off things that I'm not supposed to talk about. That's not what I'm doing at all. I don't know the story much more than other people, but I just find like, so now let's circle back to this All Access show. The thing that is weird about it, right, is Dave and I asked Tony Khan, it was Dave's question, but it was on a podcast that we both did with him about, you know, leaning into the reality stuff and the shoot stuff. And Tony Khan just thinks it's interesting. But if you're going to do that and you get the outcomes that we get, there's more interest in the follow-up to CM Punk. And Tony has been mum on that. And it's like, well, dude, you're going to have Britt and company talk trash about Thunder Rosa without her having the ability to reply. And like, we're playing into all that thing. That's the focus of this TV show. Yet the one that we care about, mum's the word. That's the part that I don't like. It's like, if you're going to do it, let's do it. But if you're not going to do it, then let's cut the other stuff and let's not pretend. That's my issue with it.
No, I 100% agree. But it does, back to Thunder Rosa, it looks like they're going to have a response to this on this show. So it seems like she is going to be part of that. So that's going to be interesting. The clip she showed, they showed of her, looked pretty staged.
Look at What's the deal with her?
Look at you, so good. You cough. You just mute your mic. I'm the worst. I just cough off. What's the deal with her? I don't know. I don't understand what's going on with her and her back injury.
Because she hasn't wrestled, right?
She has not wrestled. They did make it a point on the show, Britt Baker did. Like, she's not wrestling, but still traveling, and traveling hurts your back. And, you know, especially on those planes.
And then what about the shot of Britt getting the shot right in the back to show, to show how tough she is.
Yeah, show how tough she is.
That's some storytelling, because we're, you know, maybe Thunder's not doing that, but maybe she is doing that too. And, you know, her back is maybe worse. Like, that's the part that we don't know yet.
Yeah, yeah, that's the part that we don't know. And I like trying to make this, they're calling you interim champion, and it's like, and like a big freaking deal, you know.
Well, it seems like it's a bad word in that company. Like, Tony Storm was frustrated being interim champ. I know Moxley was pretty frustrated, but Moxley knows it from the UFC standpoint. He's like, oh yeah, Dana creates an interim champ when his main guy doesn't want to work. That's what the interim champ means in the UFC. So Mox doesn't like that definition of it.
I'm not a fan of it. I think you should just strip the person and just crown a new champion and just go that way with it. Interim, just, it seems silly. I know Tony at the time was very trying to be like, you know, copy the USC, some of the ideas from there, and wanted to apply it in AEW, but
That's not the idea to copy from the UFC. No,
exactly. It's not, definitely not the one to copy, for sure.
All right. I think I'll watch episode 2.
Me too.
But if it doesn't pick up, it may not be something I prioritize. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, I know a lot of people did like it. They liked the way that the show was put together. They liked seeing some of the personalities. I guess Sammy Guevara cries on maybe the next episode because he thinks he gets blamed for something.
He's not booked on the next show.
Yeah.
He's the Dennis Stamp of AEW.
Jumping on trampoline.
Yeah.
There was one shot that I found pretty hilarious, and I'm surprised that they kept it in. But there's this awkward moment when Adam Cole is waiting at the doctor's office and Britt pulls up. And she drives into the bushes to park her car. And he's kind of laughing at it. And so they go to open the door. And she beats him to opening the door for him instead of him opening the door for her. And so they open the door and they're about to go in. And you see the cameraman right in the reflection of the window. And I was like, wait. They kept that shot in like that. That's a little that's not one I would have kept in. Maybe they didn't have any other shot, but I was just like, wait, the cameraman is not supposed to be in the reflection on this.
I like when they go to that doctor's office and it's the same AEW doctor that's at ringside. And this is the guy that told, Matt Hardy, you're good to go. The Sammy Guevara match. No worries. You know, you almost got your brain splattered on the concrete.
One concussion is too much, though. That was the God's honest truth, these poor guys.
I know. And then he had, 2 in 3 weeks, he said?
Yeah.
Which is interesting. If he had one before, which now I remember this. This is kind of a hot topic on the Not out in the open, but it was a big discussion of like having the first one and still being there to wrestle the second. You know how you just don't recover that fast usually from a concussion like that. So interesting.
Unless he didn't realize it, and then by the time the second one came, they were like, "No, dude, like the time when you banged your head before, that was also a concussion." So you know. All right, let's move on to the WrestleMania card. The night one and night two lineups have been revealed. And, you know, we've talked about the Bloodline storyline. I think I even asked you, you know, Cody or Roman, what should they do? What do you do? On your podcast, you talked about the night one and you talked about the Usos against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. So let's just go through the nights. I found it so interesting that when Stephen A. Smith was going over this card, they had John Cena and Austin Theory on the marquee as if like that was the main event. And I was like, huh, I wonder if that was the main event until John maybe called an audible and was like, hey, I got to get out of Dodge quick, put me on first. But also it could have been, you know, ESPN, a very casual wrestling network for the marketing. They just looked at it and they go, oh, that has to be the main event. So that's why we're putting it on the marquee.
It might be a collaborative effort, like discussion, like between ESPN and WWE, like, hey, what are we? Which match are we going as pro here? And I mean, they said, hey, the main event is going to be Charlotte versus Rhea Ripley. And like you said, ESPN's like, what? But you have John Cena on this show. And so, you know, knowing that ESPN probably mostly is a casual wrestling, WWE wrestling audience, you're right. I think that's what happened. I don't think it's like a lot of people were upset about it. I saw some people angry on Twitter, but it's just marketing, right? Like, they're just.
No, marketing. I just thought it was funny. I just thought it was like, you know, I was like, did they not talk about it? Do they not know? Because WWE hadn't announced it, or they haven't announced it. What we're going on for Charlotte and Rhea is Dave.
Yeah.
Like, Dave's the one who said, as far as I know, this is still the main event. And, you know, the Observer, as we're recording, the Observer comes out in about 3 hours. So that may have changed. Mm-hmm. But I found that interesting. And then, I don't know if you saw this, but there's a clip going around, and it's Jay and Jimmy Uso talking about being at Wally Mania, and Jay Uso says something about them being in the main event, and I was like, huh. So, I mean, it's possible that it could be sort of still ongoing discussion about what's going to be in the main event. I think Charlotte and Rhea has the potential to be a little flat in the main event, though they're both such great wrestlers. Yeah. I think they could pull off the match. Is a double turn coming? If a double turn is coming and Rhea wins, then I'm kind of okay with that being the main event. But there are definitely some question marks, I think, when it comes to this lineup. So I'll quickly read it and then we can kind of talk about it. So for Saturday, Austin Theory versus John Cena, US Championship. Charlotte and Rhea, SmackDown Championship, a SmackDown Women's Championship, tag team titles, Usos versus Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, Trish, Lita, and Becky versus Damage Control, Seth Rollins against Logan Paul, Ray versus Dom, and then the men's four-way tag team match that was to get all those tag teams on TV. What would you pick for the main event?
Depends what that finish is for that tag team title. That's my, you know, I kind of like the idea of something happening where the Usos retain and Roman loses, and you come back on the next TVs where the tribal
Jay might be smiling a little bit when he's not supposed to be smiling.
Roman Reigns, the tribal chief, is still pushing his weight around on the Usos, but now Jay sees himself with two belts. Roman doesn't have his belts. And maybe he wants to be the tribal chief, or he's kind of standing up more, you know, because don't forget, Sammy's been pushing him to stand up too, right?
Yeah.
So I think that could be interesting, but they have to have a really creative way to where you're not going to just put a stink on that crowd for the rest of the show, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I could see something happen with the Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, some kind of miscommunication. I don't want them to, you know, because they just got back together. Maybe you can kind of stretch it out just a little bit more with maybe some issues between those guys, a little bit. I don't know. But if it all depends. If the Usos Sami and Kevin Owens are going over, then they should be the main event. If not, then I would kind of keep it in the middle. And then Rhea and Charlotte should probably be the main event. I kind of like the idea of Cena and Austin Theory opening the show up. This big match, and I would love to see Austin Theory win. I hope that's the case.
Hasn't it? It's been flat to me though. They're like, it was like,
oh, the story's flat. I'm just saying, like, the match, I'm just hoping he wins the match, you know.
I think he'll win the match, and that may be the problem with if they ever thought about putting that on the main event, because Cena would probably have to go over with the, you know, with that crowd. But the problem with that program, it was almost like Cena came to one show, took a giant crap right in the ring, and was like, Austin, for the next 3 weeks, all you're going to be doing is just cleaning up this big, giant pile of crap. Because Austin Theory has been going into this week by week, and he's winning some matches. He beat the Street Profits in singles matches. But he's doing these promos, and they're not great, but he's also been positioned in a way for the fans to kind of treat him as a joke. Mm-hmm. And then because I'm assuming this is because the fans have been treating him as a joke. They had him do an empty arena promo on Raw on Monday. And I was just like, man, you know, this is watching paint dry. This poor dude.
I actually liked that promo.
I didn't like it at all. I thought it was boring. I thought he's just repeating everything he said with the fans there. And the fans were just not there this time. I feel bad for him because this program, it seems like the idea was to elevate him. And I think it's just made him, you know, I think it's knocked him down a peg. But we'll see. They still have the match to make him a bigger star.
I would have Austin Theory actually beat him really convincingly and in a shorter match. Like a lot of people think, like, you're going to have the near falls and false finishes of the big title matches, right?
John has had some stinkers at WrestleMania. I don't think he cares to have the classic match, right?
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, why don't, like, all this, you know, Cena just dressed him down, and then Austin Theory makes a statement and beats him, like, in 6 minutes and destroys him, you know? I think this is going to be WrestleMania. If Cody's winning, they need to set up a lot of challengers for him, you know?
Yes.
So he's definitely would be one of them.
All right. So we have a night two. Actually, just one quick thing, only because I love this story so much. What would you do with Ray and Dom?
That one, I think Dom should go over first, and then Ray could, you know, beat him on. I think Dom needs to go over in the first one, by cheating,
I think so too.
For sure. And then he could probably have a fun build up to a nice mask versus hair match or something like that. And, you know, you got Dom growing at that big mullet out, you know? So,
you know, and Backlash is in Puerto Rico. I think they'd be really hot for that match.
Yeah. 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 I'll talk about more of that, about that in my thumbs up, thumbs down.
Okay. And for Sunday, Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, Bianca and Asuka. Gunther versus Sheamus versus Drew, Edge versus Finn Balor, Hell in a Cell, Moonshine Brock versus Omos, and then the women's four-way tag match.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What? I don't know. I mean, we've been talking Cody this whole time. You still feel it?
Yes. I think it's time for a change at the top. Yeah, I think it's 100% you got to do it at this point. I think it would hurt Cody more losing, right, of anyone on the show, I think, after all that build up. And I think, like I said, they need to change it up, get some fresh matches on top. With Cody's a champion, I think he'd be a great champion who could defend it on both brands, and he can work anyone. So he's been on fire. I've been loving his matches on television.
Do you have Roman go away for a little bit and let the twins kind of be the men? Like, how do you, because the worst thing, I think, is Roman loses, the twins lose, and then the bloodline is just done. And I know our friend John Muse had an idea in how to splinter the bloodline and keep both strong. They're not going that way. It doesn't look like, but the bloodline storyline is still such a hot thing. And it also, this is, I think, the most important part of the bloodline, is it helps these baby faces get over, because historically, well, not historically, but the last few years, WWE can't get a baby face over to save their life. And now they got Cody, Sammy, Kevin Owens. These guys are over as baby faces, and I think we got to make sure that those baby faces stay hot. And the one way is we got to keep the bloodline around. I just don't know creatively what they do with Roman if he loses that belt. Does he go away and make a big comeback? Does he stick around? And what you're saying is sort of dissension within the bloodline. Like, that story, I think, is great, because Everyone loves Jay. In their heart, they want Jay to pop this dude one, you know? So
I got more to say on my thumbs up, thumbs down on this as well. Okay. So, let's table that for a while and then, we'll go back to it. But yes, definitely a combination of a lot of things you just said there. But I was disappointed with one thing and it's going to my thumbs down and we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Get to that.
All right. So big weekend and, hopefully we'll see each other at Big Dave's house for Sunday. All right, next topic here. Let's get into our thumbs up and thumbs down. We might as well. We've been selling it hard here for the thumbs up and the thumbs down.
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
I'll let you go first. What's your thumbs up?
My thumbs up is WWE Creative. An angle that I thought, a story that I thought I wasn't really probably be into. But I am, and that's the Rey and Dominic story.
Yep.
And the culmination of at least of the finally Rey finally standing up to his son on SmackDown this past Friday. I thought it was great. And then I know like part of it's really silly, right? And a lot of people are like, that's not true. A Mexican family, they would just smack Dom, you know, the mom would take that, blah, 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 all this stuff. I know, but this is television, right? So you gotta stretch it out. And I think Triple H has done a great job of, you know, obviously he's not writing everything. There's the thousands or whatever, hundreds of writers they have, but he's the one that says, hey, this is where it needs to happen. This is where it needs to happen. Right. He makes the final call. And I think he does a great job with all these, the Bloodline storyline. And even here with Rey and Dom, when to pull the trigger, when it finally happened, I mean, there was no sweetening that crowd noise. It was like that place exploded in Vegas.
We've been waiting, man.
I mean, there were some great close-ups on the fans, and they're just like, yes! Like, they're just like everything. They usually let everything out. Like, their frustrations came out, and they're just finally, they finally got that damn little pesty Dom, that little son of a gun, got his mouth smacked. And I thought it was great. I'm like, you know what? Hell, I want to watch Dominic versus Rey. And Dominic, I think, has been pretty good. Like, it's good to see a heel being a pussy heel, you know? And,
yeah,
you know, cowering away, backing off, and begging off. I was digging it. So big thumbs up to WWE Creative with that.
You know, I was at that Raw in San Jose where he got that super duper heat. And I never went back to watch it on TV to see if it felt like this. But when we're watching live, he started to cut his promo. The fans booed him and he almost did one of these like, huh? Like, Like he almost didn't believe it that it was working, you know? And so that was a fun moment because I was like, oh, Dom, this whole thing is working. Like, good stuff, you know, keep doing it. And he just got better and better and better and better, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. And his stuff, and it's like his stuff, his comedy, I guess, the levity they throw at his character, it doesn't take away from the heat. Like, about his time in prison, like, or jail. Like, I've been in jail, you know, all this stuff he says. He
still has the tattoo tear.
Yeah, it gives you a little bit of a chuckle, but then you still hate this guy. You want to see his ass kicked. It's not like, you know, others in, like, a Sanjay Dutt or a Stokely Hathaway. He's just playing everything for a gag, and then, you know. And I think he's doing a tremendous job. What's your thumbs up?
Well, I want to say one thing. I wonder if they have a Mexican writer back there, because all I needed, I didn't need Mama Mysterio to, you know, to fight her son or anything. All I needed is when Dom snatched the mic away from her, just the instinct to grab the shoe, like just that instinct. Like, she was probably wearing heels, but the instinct to just grab a slipper or a shoe and, like, you know, threaten him. That was what was missing. Maybe some people wouldn't have gotten it, but I'm like, you know, Conan, come on. You had a whole gimmick where you took off your shoe and threw it at people. Like, let's talk people into doing that. Other than that, I think the thing's been perfect. It's an absolute slow burn. And I know some people are like, Ray's the worst. He just lets this spoiled kid. It's like, yeah, Ray's kid. Ray has rich kids, man.
Yeah.
Like the spoiled kids. Okay, so my thumbs up. Also WWE related. Nick Khan has been doing the circuit. He went on one of my favorite podcasts, the Marchand and O'Ran show, which is a sports business, sports media show. I listen to that every week, immediately Wednesday mornings when it comes on. And so I was happy to hear him there. Nick Khan's such a smart guy. Now, does your BS meter have to be have all the batteries installed when Nick is talking? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to the wrestling stuff, because there's some stuff he says about the wrestling stuff where I'm like, okay, come on, dude. But there was some interesting stuff he said about, and these guys were kind of joking with him about it, which was, oh, you know, you're going to be hosting all these big wigs at WrestleMania and all these people who may want to get in on the bidding for this company. And they were making a joke about it, but I thought it was fascinating, because if you are going to sell your company, you want them to experience this event, right? Like, you want to put them in the box and just cater to them and be like, we're first class, man. Like, we may not be, you know, worth what these giant media companies are. We're more like a sports team in that sense, where, you know, the San Francisco 49ers are worth $5 billion and the Warriors are worth $7 billion, and WWE, well, their asking price is $8 billion or more. So that's where their value is, sort of like a really rich sports team. So I find this whole week fascinating, not just because it's WrestleMania week, but because of what WWE is marketing and just the amount of real coverage that they get. Like I said, ESPN, Stephen A. Smith, he's the one who was, you know, putting out the schedules for night one and night two, is on ESPN. That stuff is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And it just shows that they are treated, at least for this event, they are treated as big time by a lot of people. So I think they've done a masterful job with this WrestleMania.
Yeah, definitely. I think they're doing a great job. And just throwing little teasers out there, putting some topic, some like discussion, you know, getting people talking.
Nick Khan said there's going to be surprises at WrestleMania.
Surprises. Yeah, we'll see what that's all about. Who could they bring out by this time?
Yeah, I know. And, you know, you would rather Nick Khan be doing this than Vince.
Like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, this is so much. Like, Nick Khan in this role is 1,000 times better than Vince. So I really enjoy seeing him doing the circuit here.
Yes, definitely.
All right, what about thumbs down?
Thumbs down? WWE creative.
Not all the programs are hitting on this.
Well, just show. A result that just left me with my scratching my head on Monday night.
Oh, I know.
Cody Rhodes defeating Solo Sikoa.
Yeah.
I thought there was no need to beat him there. I thought there could have easily been a disqualification. A big old brawl at the end of the show with, you know, Cody and Kevin and Sammy, you know, fighting off the bloodline, or just going off the air of them fighting, you know, or something like that. I just felt like Solo being undefeated, Cody winning, if he wins the title, which I believe he will, he's might be the perfect first challenger for Cody, you know, for that backlash or I just think that I thought that that's what left me. I'm like, wow, I didn't think they're gonna beat him there. And I was kind of surprised by that, because Cody would need some fresh challengers. And like I said, I think Solo was a perfect first challenger to his title reign. If he does win, of course.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty alarming too, though. Paul Heyman tried to cover it in the interview before by saying, you know, Solo doesn't care about winning this match. He's there to, you know, beat up Cody so he doesn't go into WrestleMania at full strength. So he tried, but wins and losses matter. So I would not have beaten Solo here either.
I mean, I'm sure there's ways you can heat it up again. Like, Solo could go crazy and destroy, you know, Cody. But I just think, like, yeah, you want to save that.
I would have saved first loss for the Cody title defense. On a big show, 100%. Too. On a big show.
100%. And kind of back to that bloodline discussion, I do like the idea of the Usos still retaining, still having the power within the bloodline, and Roman losing the title and just having not having the power. And there's another dispute then where Jay with Roman over the tribal chief stuff. But what I would do is, yes, Roman should probably disappear for a bit. And then when he's ready to return, he's like, and it's announced that he's returning. When the wise man, Paul Heyman, says he is returning, there's a look that the Usos give each other, you know. But then that's when, you know, when he shows up, then there's a confrontation. But you could probably hold that off for, God, it could be a month, you know, till we see him. You know, let Cody do his thing, let the bloodline of Usos and Solo do their thing and kind of carry it for a while. And then, because I think if you bring Roman right away back, yeah, you're going to overshadow the other guys right now. You know, you kind of want to build, and plus you want to build some new contenders up too. You want to build some, I think Omos is going to be Brock. Does that sound crazy? I don't know if that might sound crazy, but I think there's a guy that Cody could wrestle once. You know what I mean? Like a pay-per-view. I don't know when Money in the Bank is. I think it's in June still, right? You could do that match.
Yeah, because they're doing it in London, I think.
Oh, he might be wrestling someone else then. But I was saying, like, because of the gimmick of Money in the Bank, you can have an Omos challenger for the title on a card like that, where the Money in the Bank's probably going to get more of the winner's probably going to get the more of the news than just Cody beating a giant, right? So, but you need fresh matches. You need fresh challengers on the heel side for sure.
So I think they're doing WrestleMania Backlash. And that is, let's see what the date for Backlash is. Actually, it's not even called WrestleMania Backlash this year. It's just called Backlash. That is May.
Triple H is back.
That is May 6th.
Okay.
Then King and Queen of the Ring is May 27th, the day before Double or Nothing.
Hmm.
And you know that they're running an NXT show now on that day of Double or Nothing. They scheduled an NXT show called Battleground. Yeah. So let's see. When is Money in the Bank?
Because I think that's June and July normally, right?
Money in the Bank 2023 is on July the 1st.
July 1st. Okay.
In the O2 Arena. And then after that is going to be SummerSlam August 5th.
Yes. Yeah.
So
very cool.
All right. My thumbs down is the aforementioned Vince McMahon. The reason is because there's a few reasons. I mean, he could be the thumbs down every week for all I care, but he supposedly, there's been some things that we've seen and heard that make you believe that he might be involved a little bit more than he is. I do not think that he's the main guy in creative. I still think Triple H is that guy. But you can sort of sense that his input has been taken on some stuff. That's not the reason. He will be at WrestleMania, supposedly. That's also not the reason for my thumbs down. But there is a book that came out on Tuesday. It is called Ringmaster, Vince McMahon and the Unmaking of America. Author Abraham Reisman. I should have figured that out before we recorded, but I'm only probably like 60 pages in. This is not going to be nice about Vince. Depending on how many people read this, I think there's going to be a lot of people who learn things about Vince McMahon that they may not have known, because in the 80s, pro wrestling wasn't really covered that closely. In the 90s, it was kind of up and down. In the 2000s, they went public, so there's a little bit more focus. There's more tragedies with the steroid stuff, with Benoit Guerrero. And then these last 10 years had been fairly clean until the stuff that came out about the payoffs and such. So I don't know how many non-wrestling fans are going to read this book. I think most hardcore wrestling fans will not be surprised with anything that's in it, though very early on, he's quoting from some old interviews, and I just had forgotten about some of this stuff that he talks about that's really weird. So I think Vince, his public persona, if it is not already dirt, you know, if enough people read this book, it may very well. Now, who knows? Maybe there's some nice things about him that I haven't gotten to yet, but this book is not going to be some, you know, Vince is not sending this dude who wrote this book a Christmas card at the end of the year. Let's just put it that way. Actually, I called him dude, but I think the pronouns, I don't want to offend anybody. I think Abraham uses she pronouns. So I just want to make that clear. As I said that, I just realized that I read that somewhere. So I want to make that 100% clear that Abraham's pronouns. Okay, so let's talk about this AEW Dynamite show. And let's get into our big picture segment.
The big picture.
So I kind of looked at Dynamite, and I grabbed it into about four different topics, and we'll go over those topics. I sent you the topics beforehand. And the first one I want to start with is what's going on with the world title? What's going on with MJF? And the show started with Jungle Boy beating Matt Hardy. Sammy Guevara and Darby were watching the television screens after Jungle Boy won the match. He's got that, the finisher, is it an elbow or a clothesline?
It's like the non-hidden blade. I don't know what it is. Yeah, I don't know.
MJF comes out and he does an MJF promo. They talk about the relationship from both being early at AEW because they were both very young. MJF kind of like looked at Jungle Boy as, oh, you know, this is going to be one of the guys, you know, as far as the future of the company. Jungle Boy thought he had a friend. MJF thought, you know, Jungle Boy cares too much about these fans. He trusts the wrong people. And Jungle Boy said, you know, you may be more successful, but, you know, I can look at myself in the morning. And then MJF had to get the final word in about the, ooh, let's bring up the shoot stuff with Anna Jay being his real life girlfriend, even though she's in the Jericho Appreciation Society. And that she said he wasn't very impressive between the legs. And that caused Jungle Boy to fire up and attack him. They gave Jungle Boy a chance here. There were some times where I thought he did a pretty good job. But at the end, if we're judging by the crowd noise, I don't think they were behind him and behind him beating up MJF or trying to fight MJF, probably like they had drawn it up. I thought the crowd was a little flat for Jungle Boy at the end there. It could also have been just that segment was so freaking long.
Yes.
But I think I would say B minus, maybe. I wouldn't give it an A at any point. But if we're trying to believe that Jungle Boy is a contender, it was like a B minus, C plus to me.
Yeah, it might be a C minus. I mean, if you count everything from the match to the promo. Actually, I thought when he fired up the promo Jungle Boy did, I thought he did a very good job. But let's go back to the match. I thought the match was put poorly for him to kind of make to look like a contender when you're having a hard time beating Matt Hardy at this stage. I mean, Matt Hardy, I know he's a legend, right? Very influential. You know, the tag team of the Hardys are very influential, but there's not much more Matt Hardy can give to someone when you beat him, right? So I think you got to beat him kind of convincingly, let Jungle Boy show that Jungle Boy is beyond Matt Hardy now, on his way to the world title. He shouldn't be taking side effects to the floor, an unnecessary bump that he doesn't need to take. He shouldn't take the apron bump on that he took. It just should have been a shorter match. And also, at the end, he won after Ethan Page came out. Who did he try to hit? Either Page tried to hit Jungle Boy or he tried to hit someone else? who was it that just came out? Oh, Hook. Hook came out to save the day, right? Ethan Page tries to hit Hook, but ends up hitting Matt Hardy. And then Jungle Boy makes a comeback and wins. And so I didn't like that at all. And then also Jungle Boy's mannerisms in the corner, slouched down as MJF's talking, just didn't seem like a like he's a strong guy ready for this challenge. Like, you know, and then it did go long. And that's part of MJF's speech, too. Like, that took a while to get to where they're going. I think they could have cut that down. And I don't think Jungle Boy is ready for this spot now. I think like he, like after that Christian match, like I said before, you got to keep building him up, you know, and then maybe somewhere, maybe down the line, maybe in the summer, you can have done something if you got him ready enough. But this whole, the whole force feeding of the four pillars match thing is just, it's just actually what it is. Just they're forcing it down our throats. And I don't think people are ready for that right now.
It feels like probably Adam Cole would have been the guy if he was healthy, you know, sooner. And they had this as the backup plan. And I, you know, I've said it like this before. I don't know if you feel the same way, but if you have three number one contenders, it kind of means you have no number one contenders. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it feels like what they're telling us is no one of these guys is good enough to beat MJF. So when you put the heel in a fatal four way, it's kind of like a handicap match in a sense. And then he's going to win. And so he just beat three babyfaces in one night. And so that's a little bit weird, too. So, yeah, I don't like the presentation of this thing at all. Now, I think I'm going to save, you know, giving the final grade because Sammy still has to do his stuff. Mm. Darby still has to do his stuff. They could always switch to the one-on-one with Darby, which I think is the best way to go. But it just seems like we're getting a four-way. I don't know.
Yeah, seems like that. I kind of got had to disagree with you a bit. I don't think this is the backup because Adam Cole's back around the same time that he shot this angle. And
the reason why I say that is because he's trying, if we're watching All Access and if All Access is a shoot, he says he's trying to get back for Full Gear, which was like last November.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they thought, like, if you go from November and then we just had that pay-per-view in March, that was still five more months and he wasn't back yet.
Yeah, but if he was ready, then they could still do this. But I think they want to get Adam Cole beating Jericho first, and then, you know, then he'll be ready. And then, but they had no one really set for MJF until then, right?
I wonder, maybe they could have set him up for that pay-per-view. I don't know if it would have been Jericho, because Jericho obviously was, you know, working with somebody else, with Ricky. But I wonder if like they were gonna use that pay-per-view to have Adam back, and then he gets the win, and then he comes. I don't know that to be, we had just talked about, you know, gosh, Adam Cole could be a really cool babyface, but
and who knows? I mean, too, with All Access, like you said, some stuff we saw was real, but some stuff was obviously scripted. That meeting with the doctor, like we already know he didn't make Full Gear. Like they already know that, so they could use that as like, you know, a story, like he's trying to get to this pay-per-view, their big event, and he doesn't, right?
Yeah. Okay, so we still have to figure out what's going to happen with Sammy. I think Sammy has a match on Rampage,
which that poor guy is losing again.
I know.
You know?
I was sad to hear that was the opponent.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what happens with Darby. But that's where we are with the world title picture. Now, the second main story of this show had to do with all forms of the Elite and, you know, who's facing the Elite and everything. So our first segment with the Elite is Kenny Omega and Don Callis. And if you remember last week, Don Callis faked that Adam Page hit him. And so Kenny, we go off the air with Kenny thinking that Adam Page has struck his manager. And so Don Callis basically says, you know, I just slipped. His wrist slipped out of my hand. And then he turned it on Kenny. He was like, well, why did you automatically think that he hit me? And Kenny was like, well, because he's hit you before. But Kenny, he doesn't trust this guy. That's what we're learning. But Don Callis, being the, you know, the
Snake,
and you know, I saw he's not he's nowhere near as good as Paul Heyman, but they use him for sort of the same reasons. He goes, he's like, you know what, I'm gonna go apologize to the guy. So he goes and he's about to apologize to Hangman, and then they both get beat up by Moxley's crew. Moxley punches Don Callis, who wants to shake his hand. He falls and cracks his head on something and gets busted wide open. This dude got blood. Like, because there's so much blood in AEW, I think everyone just was like, did he really blade himself for this segment? And then we learned that it was an accident.
I thought he did, because the way they cut the camera away from him. So yeah. I figured that's what happened. Yeah, I don't know. But my favorite part is before the attack by the Blackpool Comic Club in this segment is when Hangman Adam Page is discussing the Young Bucks. He's like, yeah, you know, they're home now, so I guess we'll be okay. Or something like he was horrible in this segment, man. I'm glad the Blackpool Combat Club beat him up. Like, he deserved to be beat up for that promo that he delivered right there. Oh man, but was this a live promo? It seemed like a live promo, right?
I would guess so.
Yeah, I think it was, man. Whew, rough. And also Alex Marvez. We gotta get Tony, do something. You gotta get something else for this guy to do. He goes in to talk to Omega and Don Callis, and he just holds his hand out with the arm out with the mic like a spear. He just like, you know, it goes right in her face. It's just so awkward and goofy. It's weird. But yeah, very you know, they're teasing some stuff, and they're trying to make it like, well, did the Blackpool Combat Club really attack him? But then they just attack these guys. So I guess they did, right? So is that now a mystery? That's no longer a mystery, right? I mean,
we are to assume, right? Like, yeah, or they just attacked Hangman because he blamed them. Like, I think that was the other thing we were supposed to wonder is, did they just attack him because he blamed them for no reason?
Yeah.
They don't have proof. And we're going to beat you up for trying to bring us into this thing. I guess that would be like the gang retaliation, right? You scare everybody by beating people up so that they don't say your name.
But there's nothing like Mox saying like, get our names out of your mouth, you know,
no.
Like or something like that. Just.
So then that sets up a match, which was Kenny Omega and Jeff Cobb. Before the match starts, Kenny Omega has no idea that Don Callis just got beat up or that Hangman just got beat up. And so they have to tell him right before the match. And he's like, oh. And then he's like, I just got to do the match. I can't worry about this stuff. Then he goes and has the match. And so we could see Omega and Jeff Cobb. Now, I will say, and I'm going to probably say this almost every single time when they have these matches on Dynamite, I'm not the biggest fan of having great matches on a television show because of the commercial breaks and because of what the television show is for, which is to market your product for the bigger event. I would have rather this match happened at a New Japan pay-per-view show, a New Japan, a big show that's a special show. That being said, I thought this was a really fun match. I enjoyed it a lot. I love seeing Jeff. And, you know, Omega wins because that's the story that they're telling. Jeff looked really good. But, I don't know. I just would have rather seen this in New Japan, but I'm not going to complain about watching a really good match on television.
Well, from the promo that Ken Omega did, that he showed the highlight of the video package for, he said, come to USA. So they're going to do a match somewhere in the USA. What about the Ring of Honor card this Saturday? You think that would have been a good spot for it?
It would have overshadowed, I think, the whole show if they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, I don't know. I thought that was interesting. But the match, I thought the match was good. I thought, you know, I prefer it over the Vikingo versus Omega match, you know, because this one actually told a story. There's a couple little nitpick things that I didn't like. There's one point I think Jeff and Omega seemed to be like kind of like miscommunication. That's a little miscommunication there, or someone didn't know what was going on, what was happening next, or something like that. I don't know.
It's funny to say this because we like when you're watching and you see the little mix-ups like that, you go, oh, like if I'm watching wrestling with you,
mm-hmm.
that's how you react to something. You'll go, oh, like you'll like that's your reaction, right? And then people in the room know that, oh, there was something that got screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we don't like watching matches that are heavily choreographed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you do have a mix-up because they're not on the same page, it does kind of give you a little bit of like, well, not everything is going to be perfect, and it's better than if they just memorized every sequence of this match sometimes.
Oh, of course. But when it's like at one point, like they're just looking at each other, like, and it's obviously like it's a little thing, but you know, and it's also like I didn't like the opening spot. I didn't like Jeff turning his back, hitting the ropes, then Omega hitting the Hurricanrana and him going out. I thought instead of turning his back, they could have gone to it a little differently. But that's just my little nitpick of that. But
yeah,
overall, I thought the match was really good. It was an easy story to follow. You know, Omega's beat up. Jeff is working on his ribs and his shoulder, stuff like that. I thought that was great. But yeah, I really liked the match. And I guess not shocked about the finish. Though I thought maybe the Blackpool Combat Club was going to play into the finish, but they played into the finish after, or they played into the match. They attacked Omega after, so that's where they came in. But yeah, really good match. It's just, and then we had the big angle right after.
Yeah. So this the Blackpool Combat Club comes out after and they attack Kenny Omega, and then Bryan Danielson makes his return. I was pretty sure he was going to add to the beating of Kenny Omega, but I thought they did it in a really nice way to kind of, you know, not show their cards immediately. And, you know, he tells those guys to, you know, to get out of the ring, leave Kenny alone. And so then Kenny goes, oh, you know, now Brian's got my back. So we're back to back. We're fighting all these dudes, and he turns his back, and that's when Brian sets him up and then he pounds on him. And, you know, Bryan Danielson back as a heel. I think it'll be good, but I also really enjoy him as a babyface. Like just the character of Bryan Danielson, and also, you know, just knowing who he is, like as a human. But he'll still be a really good heel at the same time. Like he's an excellent heel when he turns heel.
Yeah.
So
he was tremendous when he was a heel in AEW. They turned him. Yeah, but then I also turned him back too soon, I thought. And, you know, and here, I don't know. Well, keep going. Sorry to cut you off.
No, so they beat him up, and he does the, I think it's the Nate Diaz where he's got the submission on and he flexes the bicep at the same time, and Kenny's out. So they're creating something between the Elite and the Blackpool Combat Club, a multi-man match of some sort, probably.
Blood and guts.
They could do blood and guts. Last year it was anarchy in the arena at Double or Nothing. So something is leading that way. I would, you know, they've used blood and guts as a TV match.
Yeah.
They could flip flop it and do blood and guts at the pay-per-view and then do anarchy in the arena at a TV show, or they don't even need to do a special TV match like that. You know, it's not like blood and guts is going to do 500,000 more fans because it's on live television. You know, you do what's best for the business. So, but yeah, they're leading to something, and you know, Hangman and Omega and have to get on the same page. But Matt, I think Matt Jackson has a bicep injury, so we'll have to kind of wait and see with where he is there.
But hit their that home is now, so they'll be okay.
No, remember when they were home, that was bad because they had bad thoughts. Daddy. They couldn't sleep, man.
It was really scary, but they're home now. They're all right.
they weren't getting their rest. They couldn't sleep.
But I will say I did not like this heel turn, because the last time we saw Bryan Danielson, he's cutting this emotional promo. He's on the ground. He's hurt.
He's going to retire.
He wants to go back. He's went numb from his head to his toes, and you're like, damn, he's gonna take a he's gonna walk away for a while. He wants to spend time with his family, little birdie, right? Like all that. It was great, and then he comes back just to turn on beat up Omega. Like It's just because, you know why? Because they need 4-4.
Well, I didn't like that promo that he did after the MJF match. I didn't like it. It was over the top, overly dramatic. But he delivered it really well. I liked that
for a big return match.
I didn't like that story. Unless we figured out how he was going to use that story for motivation.
Mm-hmm.
But that promo, it might as well have never happened based on.
Yeah, it was a waste. It was definitely a. I don't know. I'm guessing it was a change of plans. Who knows? I mean, Tony changes his plans, you know, left and right. I mean, shoot. But I think it just makes sense to me that just because, and they're like, oh, he's in the Black Bull Comic Club. He hasn't even mentioned the Black Bull Comic Club for months and months and months when he was, you know, doing his program with MJF, right? There's no interaction. Even when the Black Bull Comic Club was doing some heelish stuff, he never mentioned like he's with it or against it. He was just doing his own thing. So,
yeah.
It felt in a way very Vince Russo-esque, you know, with the swerve and everything. And it gets clearly see it coming just because you and I have watched wrestling for a long time. You probably could just sense it at this point. But yeah, you could just clearly see it coming. And I knew he was turning right away, especially when you saw the other guys standing off, when they're just standing off and not even confronting him or even talking to him or trying to have any kind of, they're just sitting there waiting. He's turning for sure.
All right. We have two small other topics that will be a little shorter here, because one of it is I'm a little surprised because they announced that the Guns Against FTR was going to happen next week. Now, Tony also said today that there's going to be a major announcement on next week's Dynamite, which he thinks will get people talking. I'm wondering, like, I don't know if it's for sure or not, but I'm wondering if that announcement is the thing that my We're Live Pal co-host Andrew Zarian had mentioned a few weeks back, which is that they're going to get a Saturday show on Turner. So it may be that, but this is a big show, right? You have the Guns versus FTR. If FTR loses, they're out of AEW. So I don't assume that they're losing. So we're going to get a title change here with the Guns. And all we had for a promotion was, I thought, a pretty good Guns promo. But FTR wasn't on the show at all.
Yes. And I thought that was strange, too.
Maybe they just think that Dax talks enough on his podcast and that's the promotion for the match. I don't know. But like, I would have expected a confrontation. I would have expected FTR to get their own interview segment or their video package interview, whatever. But man, like, that seems like the hype for what is a big, big TV match was kind of non-existent.
Yeah. Who knows? Travel, something personal that FTR can be there. I mean, that could be part of it. But yeah, you're right. I think they could have done something to give some interview time for both teams to build it. I don't think they need to have a fight or a backstage confrontation or anything, because they do it so much in AEW, it means nothing anyways.
Yeah.
But I think, like, you know, this is a good spot to maybe use Jim Ross, the old sit down interview with FTR. Mm-hmm. I think the Guns could, what they did was fine. I really dug their promo. Actually, I see so much potential in those guys, you know. Yep. They have a lot of potential. I just wish they would work with more veteran teams and to get them there, but they'll get there eventually. But yeah, you're right. It's a big match. I assume FTR is winning it. I assume they re-signed and what are they gonna do next? I was thinking, like, what are they gonna do? Are they gonna go still be baby faces, or will they go heel and come back to the Acclaimed? And I think the people might be really upset that FTR goes heel, because they really love those guys.
Yeah. All right, and then the last thing I just had was Adam Cole did return on this show, which led into the All Access show, but the All Access show did a really bad rating, and I was kind of frustrated that they did they ruined the premiere after the basketball game. And
yeah, I heard about that.
You know, I mean, I get it. Like, you know, your partners wanted a nice thing to hold the audience after you have this giant basketball audience. But you know, like, they blew the premiere of this show. Now, I don't know how many more people would have watched had they not done it, because the number was pretty disappointing. But man, I just like, wow, I was excited for this all access show. And then you're just going to show it like 2 days early for no reason, or four or five days early for no reason. So I thought that was kind of weird. But
very weird.
Adam Cole, Daniel Garcia, main event. He wins the match. Britt comes out and they celebrate. They definitely see him as a baby face who is valuable to the big picture here. And I just wanted to know your thoughts on the whole comeback.
The match was fine in the beginning, but honestly, I fell asleep. I had to watch the finish, and then that's when I saw Chris Jericho come out. I thought they at least made it a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't know why they're having confetti for just him returning, you know, like winning his match. Like, just in case he wins, we'll make sure we have all this ready for him. What if Daniel Garcia wins? They're just not going to let that stuff go.
Yeah, there should have been a segment like right before the match comes out where someone tells Daniel Garcia, you know, they got confetti up there. That thing you're going to lose, bro.
Yeah. There's just Marvez just blowing up balloons. You know, with the
well, I mean, that is a storyline for like NBA championship finals.
Yeah. Things.
Like, there are teams who have had the whole thing prepared and got the champagne ready, and then the team loses, and then they have to redo the room before the team goes back. Like, that happens in real sports too. So that's kind of funny.
Same thing with baseball many, 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 many times, right? Then I saw Jericho come out, and Jericho cracks me up, man. He really thinks this was great stuff. Like, he's like, all right, Tony, he's going to win. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to help my guy out. Now I need a shot of me going up the ramp. And then I'm going to turn. And just as a tease, Tony, we're going to tease it. Like some dramatic... you know, moment. It was so stupid. Cheesy and fake.
I didn't think it was stupid. I thought, like, say what you will about sort of how the acting and all that stuff, but I think everyone was waiting for him to do something, and the fact that he didn't do something was like, oh yeah, the show doesn't always have to move 1,000 miles an hour. We can actually let this moment sit. We can let Adam Cole and Britt have this moment, and we don't need to like jump into something immediately. That's how I saw it.
Yeah, they already could have just saved him for like next week when Cole's out there just happy as can be, winning and talking about his comeback back. Who's my next challenger? And then here comes Jericho all pissed off that he beat up his little buddy. So, you know, that sounds kind of cheesy. Just a little the look. It just came off so fake. Yeah.
All right. I think we're done here. I'm looking at the time here. I always like to look at the time to see how close we are to that 90-minute mark. We're ahead of the game. That means we didn't overstay our welcome here tonight.
No.
Good on us. Okay. So next week we'll be back. We'll talk about, you know, some of the WrestleMania stuff. So by the time we record, sometimes it's a little bit old hat, but we'll have some stuff. But, if you are interested in conversations about the multiverse show, the Impact and New Japan show that is actually going on while we are talking, Fight Game Media YouTube channel will have a live stream with Jeremy Finestone and Scott Edwards substituting for Mike Gilbert and JD, because Mike is at WrestleMania. And I think JD has had some issues with power of late. So they're going to do a live stream. We're also going to have a show right after the ROH show. Sam and Mel from the Power Bombshells, I think Paul Fontaine is going to join them, and they'll recap the ROH show tomorrow night. And then if you are subscribed to the Fight Game Media Network, the free feed, Keela and Scott will be doing shows both nights. So Saturday night, they're going to cover WrestleMania and NXT. Sunday night, they will cover WrestleMania. And I told them, because we recorded a preview show that was lost to the internet gods. They put the kibosh on it, didn't let it come out. I told them if I can see all of the stuff that I need to see, I may rejoin them on Sunday night to talk about night two. So, nice. And then you'll have your Bloodsport review on Saturday morning, Friday night, Saturday morning for Take It Home.
Yep. Yep. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to that show. And we'll see how that Thatcher Barnett match was, and Coda and was it Mike Speedball?
That's the one that I saw. And I thought Coda was awesome. Some of the moves that Speedball did, I don't know that you would necessarily do in a real fight.
I'm not the biggest Speedball guy. I also don't dislike him. I just some stuff he does, I'm just okay. He's okay.
All right. So, like I said, we'll be back. So, for John, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.